The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Yeah, good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. You'd be mithered, wouldn't you? There's so much going on. So much to get our heads around. Coronaviruses and all that and mitigation. And now they're talking about studios being compromised. There was a big meeting today. Producers of RTE Radio 1, in the event of the building being compromised, what would happen? Well, I can tell you now, and probably shouldn't, but there'd be people broadcasting from all over the country. I'd be broadcasting from the spare room at home. Brian Dobson be doing Morning Ireland from his kitchen. Marty Whelan, don't really know yet. Don't really know yet, but people would be occupying roadcasters and roadies and all sorts of things because they wouldn't be able to come in to the radio building. So they're making plans for that sort of thing. The big word is compromised. If the building is compromised, they're going to have one studio completely surgically cleaned, and that'll be ready so that if another studio is compromised, we'll be fast-tracked over there. If that's compromised, it's off home to the spare room. And then there'll be no guests coming into the radio centre. We'd just be on the phone. That's the plans. We all have plans, and I'm sure in your workplace, you've plans as well. You'd be mithered. You'd be mithered, wouldn't you? And then I watched the second part of Redress Breaking the Silence last night, and I was angry and sad and cried watching Michael O'Brien again. That amazing outburst, I suppose, necessary outburst that happened when he was on Questions and Answers, speaking to John Bowman. And Noel Dempsey was there, and a young Leo Varadkar was there on the panel, and Michael O'Brien asked the question about the redress board, and he didn't get a satisfactory answer. And then he told us in a very moving way what his life was like and what had happened to him. And he was featured last night. They showed that clip, and he was telling us that only for his wife, he wouldn't be with us today. And how did he spend his money, his redress money? He bought a mobile home in Tramore, and that has made things a little bit better for him, a little bit better. They got a pittance. They got a pittance. Average 62,000 for the redress board. Is that what a life's worth? Because all their lives are ruined. And I said this yesterday, ruined. Anyway, is there a possibility that all of those documentaries will be part of the curriculum, the history curriculum in Irish secondary schools? Is that a possibility? We need to inform our children what has happened, our dark secrets from the past, to make sure things like that don't happen in the future. That's probably not on the cards. That's probably not on the cards at all. They're telling me, don't be talking about that on air. Don't be talking about that on air. How are you anyway? You mithered? Yeah, mithered, mithered, mithered. Are you panic buying? Have you gone down and brought loads of non-perishable goods, pasta and tinned tomatoes and tinned fish? And we had this chat yesterday and Niamh said, listen, I'll be in town tomorrow. I'll just ask around to see if people are stockpiling. So she was in Dublin City Centre and she went to Moore Street. Always a place of good sense. And she asked people, what are you doing? Are you stockpiling?
Are you stocking up because of the coronavirus?
No, not at all.
How do you feel about it?
What can we do? We just have to get on with life. That's it. I'm optimistic, I have to be honest.
Are you buying hand sanitizer?
Yeah, I have some. Yeah. But, you can't go overboard, really. You have to live life as it is. And get on with it.
No.
Not panicking yet.
And any hand sanitizer?
We have two in the house anyway, but that's all. Just washing your hands. I'm not even using that.
Thank you very much.
No.
Have you got hand sanitizer and everything?
I have hand sanitizer, yeah. But I'm not going to stock up, no.
You're panicking?
No. I'm getting married in Italy in 10 weeks and I'm not panicking at all.
Oh, good luck there.
Yeah. There you go. I don't know about him getting married in Italy in a few weeks' time, the way things are going. 51551 ray@rte.ie. And we got a lovely email from Doreen Jennings to ray@rte.ie. She says, Dear Ray, not sure why I wrote this, but when you were talking the other day, describing how you were making brown bread and being transported back to your grandmother's kitchen, it felt like you were in the middle of a poem. So I listened back and wrote this short poem for you. I have to warn you that I'm a dyslexic grandmother, and so the grammar may not be all that it should be, but I checked and rechecked even so. Sorry if I got your grandmother's name wrong. I had to guess at the spelling. Doreena, thanks so much for this. Now, I've a sort of an odd relationship with poetry. I was told by somebody back in the day that I couldn't appreciate poetry because I was too mathematically minded. And it sort of put me off poetry because, you know, if you're told that sort of thing as an impressionable youth, you sort of believe them and you live your life accordingly. So I haven't really, you know, had a nice relationship with poetry since. But this might change it all, Doreena Jennings. And this is great. Baking with my grandmother, and I think it deserves something in the background, just nice and low. Tommy, nice and low. Here we go. So, Baking with My Grandmother by Doreena Jennings. Someone challenged me to make brown bread. A first for me. A perfect activity for stormy weather. Whole wheat flour, plain flour, buttermilk, bread soda, salt, and lastly the butter. I use my hands like a claw, move my fingers together to work the butter into the flour, causing a chain reaction of thoughts, transporting me back to my grandmother's kitchen, Donny Bonner. She made the best brown bread ever. All that precious memory surfaced, the smells, the warmth of her kitchen, my small hands working with hers in that ritual of bread making. I watch her lifting the loaf from the oven, feel again the saliva flow at that first taste of warm bread with melting butter. It was an unexpected thing, going back to the place of ritual to reconnect, to feel that warm glow of forgotten moments. I can hear her call out now to all and sundry, Tooraloo! I could find her anywhere, even here, in my own kitchen. Isn't that lovely? Doreena Jennings, thank you so much for that, Doreena. I'll cherish that. I really will cherish that. And I'm going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show mug that you can do whatever you like with. You can pass it on or you can cherish it or you can drink your tea out of it. Here's a great one. You have to say well done to Supermax for hopping on the Royal bandwagon, because unless you're going around with a cardboard box over your head, and I did see a woman with a bucket over her head in one of the papers today. If you're going around with a cardboard box over your head, you won't know that William and Kate are in the country. But Supermax stores in Galway City, listen to this, are giving away free dressed fries to anyone named William or Kate. You obviously have to have proof of that. Dressed fries, that's just to have a dressing. So you might have your curry ones or your garlic ones or your cheese one or your curry and cheese or your garlic and cheese. And there's also taco fries as well. So if you can prove to them before 4 o'clock today that your name is William or Kate, you will get a free portion of dressed fries. Well done, Supermax, on that one. That's a good one, isn't it? If you're of a certain age, you don't have children or grandchildren, and you're driving around tomorrow and you see loads of children dressed up and you're wondering what's going on, tomorrow is World Book Day, and a beautiful tradition has happened over the last few years. I think it's only been put in place over the last few years that in primary schools, most primary schools, the pupils are encouraged to come in dressed as their favourite character from a book, which is a lovely thing. So it's sort of a literary Halloween, if you like. So there'll be people, there'll be Harry Potter's a go-go all over the place. There'll probably be characters from Frozen, maybe robots from Boot, Shane Hegarty's book, and mammies and daddies will be fretting tonight. I told you, John. This isn't my problem. John is the husband now, just for your information, or partner. I told you that it was this, now you said you'd do it, now it's Thursday evening or Wednesday evening, you haven't done anything. So let us know what your child is dressing up for tomorrow, or your grandchild for World Book Day. Just announced the pubs are to close, then you will see stockpiling, says Derek in Wexford. And re-shortage of hand sanitizer. Doctor on Radio Ulster this morning said, take a pack of baby wipes and add some vodka. That's your sanitizer, says Katie and Armagh. I'd have to see the scientific evidence that works. There's loads of conflicting, and as you would imagine. And Jürgen Klopp was asked about the coronavirus at a press conference yesterday, the day before. And he said, why are you asking me? I'm just, a manager of a football team with a baseball hat and a bad shave. Why ask the experts? And that's right, because there's loads of people out there who have opinions and there's misinformation around. And there's even the experts are contradicting each other, so it's confusing. I know it's confusing. Anyway, 51551 RadioRTE.ie. You'd be mithered. You would. Bob! Rat Trap! It's the Boomtown Rats, fronted by Bob Geldof, of course, and he's in all the papers today. He was at the Virgin Media Dublin Film Festival launch last night, and Citizens of Boomtown is on at 10:15 tomorrow night on RTE One Television. I think it's a series of documentaries about the Boomtown Rats. He's always entertaining, is Bob Geldof, and that's one of my favourite Rat songs. I was in Prosperous today to meet William and Kate, and they shook hands with everyone, including myself. It was a great experience, says Loretta. And Sarah, Kate, Felix and Louise, good afternoon, Ray. With all the doom and gloom we here in Prosperous, County Kildare had a fantastic visit from Prince William and Kate this morning. They had a great turnout from all the locals. Thanks to them for taking the time to visit and chat to us all, and especially myself and grandson. We're all on a high, Sarah, Kate, Felix and Louise. And on the coronavirus, listening to your programme here in Italy, everybody is going around as normal. That's probably not in Northern Italy. And on vodka, we used to use neat vodka back in the late 70s when our ears got infected from cheap earrings, and it always works, says Karen. And in my son's school, says somebody, instead of the kids dressing up for World Book Day, they have to bring in a spud, a potato, dressed up as a book character. That's like dressed chips, is it? The Rats were great, weren't they? They were great, weren't they? Well, they're still doing it. They're still touring. I see Genesis are touring for the first time now in 13 years. They announced it on BBC Radio 2 this morning. Phil Collins and your man Rutherford and Banks, isn't that the other guy? I know Phil Collins' son is playing the drums as well. They're all in their late 60s and back on tour. I interviewed Phil Collins. He was a bit grumpy, but I liked him. Do you know, there was an honesty about him a few years ago. It was on the phone. He wasn't here. Anyway, 51551, ray at rte.ie. More about the Royals' visit to Prosperous in County Kildare after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
As well as pictures of Bob Geldof, of course, there are pictures of William and Kate and all the papers today up at Oras and Uachtaráin and the Guinness storehouse. But today they made big news in Prosperous County Kildare when they visited the local Londis store. And Philip Steins of Steins, Londis and Prosperous County Kildare is on the line. How are you doing, Philip? Hello, Philip.
Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Good man. Is this the most exciting thing that's happened in Prosperous in a long time?
In a long time. Well, as long as I'm there, it is anyway. Most certainly,
So
they said they were coming and nobody believed them. Even yesterday we were telling customers and they were saying, oh, yeah, yeah, they're coming to London. Yeah, they are. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So how did it happen then? Was it a call, an email, a text? What was it?
Basically, the Gareth got in contact with me last week and on the QT saw me, look, would you be interested? And I said, yeah, sure. Like, why not? Like, I mean, when do you get a chance to meet them? Like, so it was all arranged. So, yeah, it just rolled in. So we had a lot of excitement over the last couple of days with the guards all around and everything else. But, yeah, it went off very well.
So you obviously had to tell your staff.
We had to keep it a secret for a while. So kind of Monday it kind of broke with staff. And yesterday kind of customers started coming in saying, some of them believed, some of them didn't. But yesterday it kind of broke. But there was a huge crowd. I think everybody in Prosperous was there now, to be honest with you, right?
And I'd say, Philip, it was like the prodigal son returning home, but multiplied by 100.
So exactly. Yeah, I'd never seen so many people. I didn't realise there were so many royalists around.
Right, there you go. They come out of the closet, don't they?
They do indeed, yeah.
And was the shop spick and span? Not that it isn't spick and span all the time.
Oh, it always is, right? But we 24 hours of cleaning and shining and polishing before they got there, I can tell you.
And what about dress code for the royals?
Exactly, yeah. I looked like I was going to a wedding tomorrow. Yeah.
So why were they in? What were they buying?
I think basically there was the charity that charity that they're obviously involved with, and they just wanted to do a bit of lunch with them. So they just came down to the shop. It was meant to be like them just coming to the local shop and picking up their few bits and pieces, and then going back down and cooking a bit of lunch, whatever they were doing. So
right. It
was as simple as that. But as I said, it turned into a bit of, I suppose anywhere they go, it turns into a fanfare, which
it does,
is exactly
yeah,
what
a bit
happened,
of a circus,
you know?
Yeah. And what did they buy?
They were just buying, I think, the makings of a soup and a bit of brown bread, and it was just basic stuff, butter, and like it was, you know, just your basic fare, you know. There was nothing extravagant on it.
And was Kate going to make the soup, or she was going to?
I haven't a clue. Now I imagine they were all getting involved in it, like you mean. But they all went around, and as I said, they weren't there for long, like maybe 10 or 15 minutes. And
you shook hands with himself.
Shook hands with them. We met them all now, and some of the girls got selfies with them. I think they sent them on to you there.
Yeah. We put them up. Yeah. Did you? Was there a conversation, Philip?
Only small. It was only basically hello, and you know there was very little very little conversation, to be honest with you. That's what you just said. You're the managing director, are you? And I said, oh, yeah, that's me, all right. Yeah, general dogs, buddy.
How long have you been there in the Londis?
I'm there 17 years in the shop, yeah. I'm there a good few years.
Because that's not a Kildare accent, really.
No, it's not. No, I'm happily living in Kildare for 20 years.
Yes, yeah. You're a Dub, are you, originally?
Dub, originally, yeah.
Yeah. You know the history. Prosperous is famous for traditional Irish music.
That's right, Dublin Dowlings, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they used to come out from the city back in the 70s, 60s and 70s, didn't they? The likes of...
Well, that was, wasn't Christy Moore?
Christy Moore, Planxty, recorded, yeah.
Got a picture taken there as well, yeah.
Did you?
I remember the front of one of their albums is there in Prosperous somewhere.
That's right.
Called Prosperous, yeah.
Yeah. So they're gone off, what was your sense of them?
They were lovely people now, very relaxed and easygoing and, you know, very friendly. Like, I mean, there's no airs and graces really, but to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, very easy to chat away to and, you know, said.
So you got the photograph, that'll be framed obviously up there.
Yeah, well, as I said, they had their own official photographer in.
Oh,
so
did they?
We're hoping that we'll get this.
And do you do the lottery down there in Steins?
We do.
Yeah. Have you had a winner over the years?
Well, only small ones now. People think because we're in Prosperous, they're going to win huge money. but today that hasn't happened, but you never know. Yeah. There's a good few people bought some today, so...
Yeah, there's that old saying that when I was growing up that a prosperous man married a clean woman.
Well, that's right, I've heard that one, all right.
You've heard that one. So what do you think, bigger, a big win in the lottery or the Royals visiting? Which is...
Well, actually, one of the girls that was working the shop, she thought somebody had won the lottery because I couldn't tell her at the time what it was. Right. I just said something big happening and I needed a bit of information off her, but she was convinced it was a lottery win, so as I said, maybe lottery win next.
Okay, right. Well, listen, thanks for taking our call.
No problem, Ray.
Philip Stein's there, provider of Stein's Londis in Prosperous and County Kildare, who hosted Kate and William today. They're off to a Chagask farm in County Meath, I'm told now, and they continue their whistle-stop tour of Ireland until tomorrow evening, isn't it? Thursday evening when they fly out. Now, 51551, ray@rte.ie.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're joined in studio by Cian Carroll, and Cian celebrated the 4th anniversary of being off the gambling.
Yes.
People don't say it like that, Cian, do they?
They don't. They don't, Ray. Great to be here, obviously.
Yeah, good to see you. So, the end of January this year.
Yeah.
It was the 4th anniversary of when you stopped gambling.
Yes, on that date.
Right.
My last bet was Liverpool-West Ham in the FA Cup. West Ham, obviously, I think we're on a good run, and Liverpool have put out a shadow side, and I thought, this is a good opportunity to win money. Coming to the end of it, obviously, but put a lot of money on it, lost it, and that was kind of the turning point. That wasn't the turning point, that was the finish point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the low.
That was the low.
Okay. So that was your last bet. Can you remember your first bet?
I can. My first bet, actually, and this is kind of like there was a large separation. So I was 10 years old. It was the 1994 Grand National, Minnehaha, Richard Dunwoody. And I was never into horses. It was just a thing back in the day in modern society, like in Irish society.
Yeah, people did it.
They still do it now,
yeah.
Obviously. But my mum put it on for me. Everybody, all the kids on the street had a bet. And I won, and I spent them all on Premier League stickers.
Did you?
Yeah, all on Premier. I got
really proud of it. Can you remember how you felt as a 10-year-old? Winning.
Elation. Yeah, it was a real buzz because I only picked it on the name, as you probably still do now. It was a huge buzz.
Mad you still remember the name. And
I do. Yeah, I remember.
What age are you now?
I'm 35.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Unfortunately.
So you obviously didn't gamble through your teenage years, did you? Right.
No, I was actually dead set against it.
Why?
I just didn't agree with it. It was not something that we did in the family. The people that I hung around with didn't do it. So, yeah.
Right.
It was just never a thing around me. So I just didn't do it.
Okay.
So
then, as an adult then, what sort of... tipped you over? Then.
Well, I lost my job in 2009 as I was at college, and I'd just taken out a 10 grand loan to buy a car. And that was obviously back in the, like in and around the end of the Celtic Tiger, and people were still giving out decent money. And I had to keep basically paying that loan back. And I was only getting benefits. So I panicked. And I remember thinking the only way I can make supplementary money here was to get into the betting. So it kind of started small, and I'd go with like 5 and 10 euro accumulators and doubles on football only, really, because that's all I ever followed and knew really as a sport, football and rugby. But it was always soccer bets. Right. So yeah, it started really, really small, just a hobby, just to keep me interested and make money.
Make money, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, make money, yeah. Which is
it's an odd choice.
It's idiotic when I think about it now, frankly, but knowing what I know now. But
So, like, you could have got a part-time job or whatever, it was the beginning of the recession, so it was tough to get a job.
It was, yeah, yeah.
Like, I think within a couple of years, the unemployment rate went from something around 5 or 6 to 17%.
Yeah, yeah. It was massive. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was bad news back then. Yeah, yeah, so it was. It just felt like it didn't. It wasn't like a last resort or anything. It just felt easy to me because I like football. I was always watching it. I was always talking about it. I felt like this was a thing that I could make money on because it was an ego thing. I was like, I know football, I can win money on this.
Yes.
And obviously I delved into stats.
You can predict the future.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Little did I know. Yeah.
So it started small then?
It started small. And then gradually through the first couple of years, it just escalated. So just it stopped being accumulators and it started just being single bets with greater amounts, with larger and larger amounts. To the
what
point
are we
then
talking
it just,
about?
In terms of amounts,
yeah.
I'd start in terms of like small amounts, it would have been maybe like 50 and 100 and then just kind of like went from there into like maybe like thousands.
Okay.
Yeah. No, and I don't mean that in a flippant way. Like, basically, I hear these stories about like Tony O or Tony 10, Tony O'Reilly and guys in the GA, and like you hear some real, real horror stories. And like mine was a horror story relative to me, but like, in reality, like, it's not really. It's like, this is like an everyday thing, which I keep on talking to people about, is like your everyday guy in the street or girl, like, is basically, these are your everyday medium amounts, whereas like your Tony 10s and all that, like, they're the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, well, that's an extreme story.
It's an extreme story, yeah.
And, like, and it's millions.
It's millions. It's fantastical,
like,
stuff.
Like, there's hundreds of thousands over a weekend.
Absolutely,
and all that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, that wasn't my story. Like, my story was 50s and 100s and just a compulsion to keep on going.
How were you doing it? Like, were you doing it online? Or
online.
All?
It would start online, and then when I got to the end of the process or was getting to the end of the process, it became me trying to control it by going into a shop, if that makes sense.
It sort of does, because you
well, you're so accessible, because what I was doing near the end of it was I was closing down account by account, self-excluding myself. But I was still had the option to go into a shop if I wanted, and I knew that. Mm. So I could always go in there if I wanted to bet.
And back then in that 2010, around then, there was online betting.
Yeah.
Not
to the
same extent.
Yeah, no.
No, and there weren't smartphones yet.
No, not unless you were betting on a BlackBerry.
So you had to go to a computer or whatever.
Yes. Like, all the betting I did was all on laptops. Laptop would be. I'd have the laptop in front of me from one end of the day to the other, and that'd be like a 7 weekly.
So how was your life, your parallel life, going on? You were betting away, and what else was going on?
It was a difficult thing because it's so easily hidden. Like, people knew that I bet, but not to the extent that I was doing. Like, I was up at 3 a.m. in the morning, like, betting on Argentinian football. Crazy stuff. People knew I was betting, but not to the extent that I was. So you could hide it, but not really hide it. You could hide the fact that you were spending thousands every week, or betting with thousands every week.
Mm. Like, this would be your salary.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it was a salary, but I was losing as much as I was winning. And actually, to large extent, I was losing a lot more.
And describe to me the feeling you were getting.
The feeling was always kind of, it would start with ego. It would start with ego going, that's like, I would be eyeing up bets as the weeks, because there's football on all the time.
Yeah.
So I would be like eyeing up opportunities going, that's a game that I can win money on. And then it turned into every game I thought I could win money on. And when you were betting, you were going, this is a sure thing, this is a sure thing. And obviously then the in-play thing came in. So if the bet was felt like you were losing, you'd go in play and try and cover yourself.
Just explain to people who don't know what the in-play thing
in
is.
In-play would be obviously when the event is taking place, you can obviously bet in-play. So you could have a bet before the game. And then when you go in play, let's say a team's winning or a team's drawing 1-1, you can obviously back either team to win that game. Yes. So that's an in-play bet.
At halftime,
10 minutes to go, yeah. 1 minute to go, whatever. As long as the market's open, you can obviously have that bet. So I think that's what really exacerbated the problem was the online stuff. Sorry, the in-play stuff, where you could have a bet on anything running live, like anything at all. At any one point, there could be 150 sports events. Or
so explain that to me then. Mm. What was the difference between that and what came before it?
What came before it was...
I know what came before, but like, why was this so exciting?
The thrill of the live event. It's the live event. It's like you're watching it as it's happening.
And it's immediate.
It's immediate. Yeah, yeah. You're getting that buzz off of placing that bet. But also the weird thing about it is that once you lose that bet, it's like a secondary kick. It's like you automatically feel like you need to go in again straight away if you've won or lost. It doesn't make a difference whether you've won or lost.
So when did the feeling, you know, that ego thing, I can predict the future, I know football, I know that, you know, Liverpool are going to beat West Ham 2-0. Yeah. When did that change?
When did it change?
Like, did it become something different as it became addicted?
I don't think so, no. I think you just realise that you think you can game the system, but the system actually games you.
Okay. Now, that brings us nicely onto the fact that you started working for...
I did, yeah. I worked for a few...
Betting companies
within the industry in Ireland. And
in what role?
Mostly just as social media and content.
Okay, right.
So,
but you were in the buildings.
I was in the buildings. Yeah. As it was happening. So, and I would be betting as I was doing my job. As I was doing my full time.
And that was
job,
okay, was it?
That was fine. Yeah. Yeah. As far as I know, anyway, nobody ever told me anything different. But it was fine.
So, were you privy to the machinations of how betting companies work?
Yeah.
But they're a profit-making company.
They're a profit-making company.
And for them to make profit?
You don't make profit. and if you do make profit, you're in trouble with them. And that's the reality of the betting industry.
Well, they can't do anything to you.
No, they can't, but they can shut you down.
Right.
They can shut you down. If you're winning too much, they will shut you down, which is... probably something that not a lot of people know.
How would they do that? Just closing the account.
Yeah. Just closing the account. That's it. As simple as that.
Mm. So as you became aware of how it worked, and obviously people on the outside know this as well, profit-making organisations, they make profit, you don't. That's it. So you're likely to lose eventually. Did that change your attitude to your gambling?
No, it actually didn't. It didn't. And maybe I'm a bit of ashamed of that now, in that I continued to work. Obviously, I needed a job, and you don't always have to work in that job, but I was working in it anyway. And as I, even though like I'd stopped and had, I was on the road to recovery to a certain extent, I still feel ashamed now that I continue to work in the industry.
Do you?
Yeah, a little bit, because I remember saying to my dad a couple of times, like, I need to get out, because you were facilitating people's gambling addiction. You were pushing it on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say that personal responsibility doesn't come into it, because it does to a certain extent. But I still felt like I was tempting people into betting. You can do that in a persuasive way. If people follow you on social media accounts or if they're on your email list or anything like that, so you can get in contact with them, and you're always in front of their face. So, yeah, it was...
And where did the personal responsibility come into your story?
Personal responsibility to me is a big thing, because I knew what I was doing. I knew I had a problem. Like, I knew I had a huge issue. I remember like reading, I think, Niall McNamee's story from Awfully GA.
Yes.
And I remember reading his story going, geez, like, you know, that's absolutely horrible what's happening to him. But deep down, I knew that was happening to me.
Mm.
But I continued to do it anyway. I couldn't stop myself at that point.
And what aspects of your life were suffering Because that's what they say about addiction, when it affects your life.
Personal relationships, definitely. Friends and family. And basically, you get to a point where gambling becomes your world, becomes everything that you think about from the first minute to the next.
And what about funding it?
Funding it was just from working. And you know, again, something that I'm like terribly ashamed about, and obviously I'm probably going to drop my mum and dad in it now, is that like I got to the point, and the industry got to a point where you could use anybody's bank cards to a certain point. And in the very early days, I resorted to using my mum and dad's bank accounts to actually bet. Now, not to a large extent, but to enough of an extent that I would be ashamed about now. And it's obviously a hard thing to
do. You can't do that
about.
Now, can you? Or can you?
I don't know. I don't know. But I do know that at the time that I was doing it, you could win money using that card. Sorry, you could win or lose money using those cards. But you couldn't take the money out. So the betting companies would keep that money.
So to explain what was happening then with your parents'
credit
card.
So basically you could
attach. So if you won, then it went into their account?
If I won, no. If I won, it remained in that betting balance.
Oh, right. And you're
exactly,
okay.
Yeah. Okay. But you couldn't, unless you verified your details. With like,
could you take money out?
You couldn't take that money out. So that money remained in the betting account.
Okay, so the only thing you could do was bet more with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Which to be fair...
What happened when your parents found out you were using their credit card?
It was difficult. It was difficult, and I had a strained relationship with my mom and dad. Like, don't get me wrong, my mom and dad, like, we have a great relationship now. Like, I love them to bits, but back then, I remember it was quite strained, and yeah, it wasn't a nice place to be for me.
Yeah.
And obviously...
And what was your biggest bet?
My biggest bet... It wasn't so much the biggest bet. It was basically over the course of an evening. I went from about 25,000 down to about 1,500.
Right.
When I say in the course of an evening, I mean the course of a game. So obviously it was 2014 World Cup. It was Belgium against the USA. I remember it. I was actually working in the office at the time, and I lost a lot of money. The head completely went.
I'm reading. This book, Colin O'Gara's book, Gambling Addiction in Ireland.
Mm.
And the problem is there's no research done on problem gambling in Ireland. So
no.
we don't know how many people are suffering.
Yeah.
Anecdotally, people say to me all the time when I meet people, you don't know how bad this is. This is really bad, particularly with young males.
Mm.
They have it 24/7, so they can do it in their bedrooms now on a smartphone.
Mm.
They don't even have to have a laptop. What do you think? And I know it's just your opinion.
It's obviously difficult to say, like you said. Basically, having come out as a problem gambler, people have got in touch with me, and obviously, like, they've more than I would have expected got in touch and said that they were going through the same thing. And it's like I keep saying, it's like it's your everyday problem gambler. It's not your extreme cases. I remember, like, at the very end, I was obviously, you know, you've got smartphones and you don't know what's going on in kids' bedrooms, but it's like at the very end you go into betting shops and they're filled with young lads. Obviously, like, it's very prevalent as well within the GAA circles, in terms of, like, obviously there's a lot of young Irish males playing GAA, so obviously it's going to be prevalent in those circles. But yeah, I think there's a huge problem coming down the road.
Yeah. Now the majority of people gamble by way of entertainment.
Yes.
And they enjoy it.
And this is it.
Yeah.
This is it. And this is where.
And that's always cited.
Yeah,
by
I mean,
the
this is
companies.
Where personal responsibility comes into it.
Yeah.
So you've got to have the now sort of cop on to be able to say, look, I've got this issue, and it does come down to.
And what about, like, Colin O'Gara says that there should be a ceiling on the amount that somebody can bet. So once, you know, it goes over, say, for example, I'm just picking a figure out of my head here, 20 grand or 10 grand or 2 grand, that's it. They should close their account and prevent them from betting anymore until something happens.
Yeah. I mean, there is that. You can set yourself limits.
Yeah.
You can do that personally. Now, in reality, like, you're probably not going to do that unless you're thinking to yourself, like, I've got an issue here. I need to just, okay, I might not stop, but I'll cap it. But most people won't do that. I mean, some betting companies will be better at others than at shutting stuff down. So I remember like one UK firm in particular was very, very good in terms of I self-excluded. And then I was like, I panicked and I was like, no, I want that account back. And they refused to open it.
Okay.
Flat out refused.
So self-excluded is where you close your account?
You close your account and you say, look, I need to finish this.
Okay.
And you need to stop me and close that account.
And is there a process to do that?
Yes. Yeah, you can do it by email. You can do it by phone call, live chat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, that's interesting.
Mm.
So you self-excluded from all your accounts and you were still going into betting offices?
Yeah, at the end, yeah.
At the end?
Yeah, at the end.
And was there a moment, was there something that happened in your real life, so to speak?
Yeah, I had a long-term relationship with a girl and basically it had, over the course of a little bit, kind of just fallen to pieces, and that was one of the huge issues.
And did she know you were gambling?
Not to the extent that I was, and I kind of hid that from her fairly well.
Because you're an addict, you have to lie, don't you?
Yeah, you do, and you have to avoid scenarios. So,
if you,
let's say there's two huge games on at the weekend that you're transfixed on and you're like, I need to be there to bet through this, you will make excuses to miss things and miss occasions. It's funny, I was coming up from Newry and I used to live in Sandymount and I was driving down the Sandymount Strand and I remember just as you were talking about it, basically standing out at about 11 o'clock at night and feeling like my life was falling apart. And that was the turning point for me.
And were you in debt, Cian?
I wasn't, right. Thankfully, because basically I didn't take any loans out in terms, well, they wouldn't have given me a loan probably at that point, but I wouldn't take a loan out for betting. I just, that was the only thing that I could thankfully keep under control.
And what's your advice to people? Because you've 4 years without a bet.
Mm.
You worked within the industry, so you saw how it works. What's your advice to people who think they may have a problem with gambling?
I think it's different for everybody, Ray, because this is going to sound a bit weird, but if you have a certain amount of emotional intelligence or responsibility, like in your head, you'll be like, right, I'm able to, I know I've got an issue here, I need to stop. And then you might be able to put that into practice. But not a lot of people will be like that.
Yeah, well, but that's addiction is addiction.
Addiction is addiction. Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I do understand that. It's very, very difficult. Get yourself into a counselling program.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt, get yourself into a counselling program. Exclude yourself from all accounts. There's betting app or there's apps out there that will allow you to self-exclude from every online betting company. And I would basically just say, look, talk to your parents, talk to the people around you and let them know, because if they don't know, they won't be able to help you.
How are things for you now?
Yeah, very good. Very good, yeah. Yeah, I got it all back on track. I met a great girl, Amy. She's kind of been like a very, she's basically the hands and the purse strings.
Right.
Basically.
That's important.
So, yeah, it is, yeah.
And do you have cravings?
No, yeah. I do have cravings, yeah, I do. Very, very, it comes and goes. Mm. There'll be certain events where I'm like, oh, I'd love a bet on that. And it just kind of, I just let it kind of wash over me and just, I'll feel it and then it'll go and then that's it, done and dusted.
Right.
So I'm probably lucky in that sense, but yeah.
Is there anything you saw within the industry that shocked you?
A couple of times there was things where there was an incident where an email was sent to customers who had closure accounts and they were offered a free bet temptation to kind of come back and that was something that you wouldn't want to be involved with because obviously you don't want people kind of relapsing, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for sharing your story and been so honest with us.
Yeah.
And mind yourself.
I will do. Thanks, Ray.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Cian, thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for texts. Now, when we were down in Cork recently, the lads from Cry Monster, Cry, Jamie and Richie Martin came down and sang a couple of songs for us. And when we were there, they told us that they had a new documentary coming out. And we said, when it's out, sure, come back in, sing the song, tell us about it. So the lads are back. Jamie, good afternoon.
How are you, Ray?
Richie, good afternoon.
Hello.
So the documentary is called...
When the Snow Falls, I'll Be Gone.
Right.
And it was shot in Switzerland.
And it's
in
a
the
gig.
Alps.
Is it a gig?
It's a gig. It's about us travelling 2,200 metres up the Alps to play a gig in a cabin. And it's about our journey up there and the people who put on the gig there and right. what we experienced.
And altitude sickness.
Yes, I'm not that yet. But.
Is it difficult to sing at that height?
No, it's okay, actually.
It's difficult to sing to a lot of things up there where you get up after walking for 10 hours.
The height cleared the lungs, though. So
that's it, fine.
And before we get into the song, why would you do that? Just because, or...?
We were offered it, but...
Yeah, we've always liked to push ourselves, you know, like as musicians, travelling musicians, independent artists, we like to try and find out the different things in life to go and experience. And when the offer came up, and we'd been out there a couple of months beforehand, and they asked us to do it. It's a once a year gig that they do, and they only pick certain people. And they asked us to do it, and we said we couldn't miss it. So
nice to be asked.
Absolutely,
nice to be asked. So when the snow falls, I'll be gone, and it's out March 14th. Where has it been screened?
It's been screened for one day in the IFI, and it's going to be up online on our website, crymonstercry.com, and on our social media channels and YouTube. So,
well, good luck with that.
Thanks very much.
What are you going to sing for us?
We're going to sing Tides, the title track of our new album.
One, two, three. Dark and cold, we wait to swim. Look at all the haters suffering in sin. Pull together all our souls, you know, and drag them in. And they follow you until the day you die. I tell myself I dealt with this before. Hard to get a handle on you walking out the door. So just take another message to the people who know more. The talk is growing old and so am I. It's so wide, it's so wide. An ocean lies between. Do we fight the tide? It's alright. It's alright. I'm waiting on my moment to arrive. All along I know the score. It's time to face the music or drown forevermore. Watch you chase the love you need across our bedroom floor. And the night a part of both of us did die. It's so wide, it's so wide. Fight the tide, it's alright, it's alright. I'm waiting on my moment to arrive. It's so wide, it's so wide. Yeah, an ocean lies between us, and still we fight the tide. It's alright, it's alright. I'm waiting on my moment to arrive.
That was really lovely.
Thanks very much.
I remember working with Phil Coulter on Eurostar. There you go, I'm name dropping. But he was the first person who drew my attention to the fact that siblings have a harmony that other people can't achieve.
Yes. Yeah, they call it blood harmony.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Right.
And apparently it's a big thing wherever we go. Like for us, it's been just natural. We've sung together our whole lives, but people always come up to us after gigs and they talk about blood harmony.
Blood harmony, there you go.
I find it very touching as well. I don't know what it is. We notice a lot more when we're going around the country now this time out. A lot of people have come up to us after shows and say, you know, the brother thing.
Yeah.
I suppose it's, you know, it appeals to some family and they think about family. Yeah. So.
No, there's definitely a sound. It's lovely. So that's the title track from the album Tides. And Jamie and Richie are going to stay with us and sing us another song before the end of the programme. Thank you very much. 51551 ray@rte.ie. And if you have a problem with gambling, you can go to rte.ie/helplines. And Keane Carroll was the name of the man. And if you missed the interview, you can come back and listen back to it. And from County Limerick Mother, she says, such a lovely, honest man. He should be must-have guest speaker to all TY students. They're so vulnerable at that stage and are very impressionable. He could give them food for thought and a good life lesson on gambling, says that person. And Doreen, who wrote the poem that I read out at the beginning of the programme, has been on and she enjoyed the fact that I read it out. Thanks again. That was great. And the mug is in the post. Now, tonight on RTE1, can I recommend that you sit down in front of the telly at 9:35 and watch Big Life Fix? Because it's a heartwarming, life-affirming hour of television. And with everything that's going on, it's the perfect antidote. So tonight you will see the story of James Smith, who's 6 from Donegal. You might have heard his mother on Morning Ireland this morning. James had both his legs amputated a few years ago, and now he goes around on his hands. And the Big Life Fix team were charged with building James something that he could move around in, but not a wheelchair, but something that would be cool that he would like. And when you see it tonight, you'll be amazed. And the other story is that of Jacinta Dixon, who joins me now in studio. How are you doing, Jacinta?
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. And Lorna is with her. And Lorna sorted out, so to speak. Lorna Ross. How are you doing, Lorna?
Hi, Ray.
Yeah. Now, Jacinta, you were diagnosed with Alzheimer's a few years ago.
That's right.
But it's not what we traditionally know as, it's a different type of Alzheimer's.
Is it a different kind of Alzheimer's? I'm not so sure. It's Alzheimer's.
Traditionally, because I watch the program, so yeah. I know your story. So, so traditionally, we think of Alzheimer's as not being able to remember yesterday or the day before. Sometimes people don't even remember their names. Yeah. They don't recognise their children, all of which you do.
I do.
You do.
So
you have 3 children and you recognise them when they come to visit.
Absolutely.
And you recognise your grandchildren.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's not that type of Alzheimer's.
Absolutely.
So the way Alzheimer's affects you is that there is a problem between the neural paths that get to your memory.
Yes.
So if you can imagine you're going down a corridor to get to the library of your memories, that's blocked in some way. So that's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how does that affect you then in your day-to-day life?
I think I try not to let it affect me. I work and try and do as much as I can as I would normally do. But there are limitations.
Okay.
There are limitations and I have to realize that and accept that.
So for example, I
used to go off hiking. It's really difficult for me to do things like that now because I need support. Before I didn't, I'd need support. Mm. So I'd always have to have somebody with me, and that's not always possible. Mm. You know, things like that. Going farther afield for me is more difficult.
Yes,
it's challenging for me.
And then things that you used to be able to do that you can't do now.
Yeah,
like reading.
The reading has gone completely, and it's reading and writing have gone completely.
Gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And telling the time.
Telling the time. Late for everything, or 5 hours early.
Right.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we take telling the time for granted, I suppose.
You really do. You think that's something that you'll always... And I can look at a clock and I can say, see a six and I can see a whatever and put those two together and do something with them.
Okay.
I can't.
So you can see that and you can see that clock up there, but the pathway to the part of your brain that tells you that that's a time of the day in a 24-hour clock, that's gone. That's
means
gone.
Nothing to me.
Means nothing to me. Right.
It's a real puzzle.
Yeah. So you use us in RTÉ Radio 1 as your sort of clock.
Absolutely. And, of course, I have...
We're going to come to that. We're building up a picture for people.
That's what I do. I just have to... I've always been a TV radio addict anyway, so like that was just a continuation
of that. Yeah.
But it was important to me the time for getting time then later.
Yeah, it's difficult for you to articulate how it's affected you. Is it, you know, say for example, say boiling the kettle. Can you boil the kettle?
I can boil the kettle.
Yeah.
I can cook for myself, but not to the extent that I could.
Right.
So I can still go to the shops and buy some food. I can still, but I have to ask for help in the shops. Because in a grocery shop, you have just boxes, piles, everything.
Mm.
They're just piles of rubbish to me.
Okay.
I have no idea what they are.
Okay, so you wouldn't know rice versus pasta or...
That's where the eyes would come in. I would see this white blob or something and I wouldn't know whether it was pasta, rice or... I could probably say it's one of those things.
Yes, but I
can't say what it is.
What it is, yes.
What it is. So that's a bit of a bummer, you know.
Yes,
So it's just, but I'm kind of bloody minded, you know.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Stubborn. Stubborn. Yeah.
But it can be, you know, it can be good. But on the other hand, it can be, the stubbornness can get me into a right stressful situation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So things that you know can't tell the time, can't read books anymore. Can't operate something like a hi-fi system.
Oh God, no!
No, no, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Not a chance.
No,
I've got such a big, apart from the music that I've, that other music that I've got. I've got a whopping great pile of music.
CDs, but you can't
CDs
play them.
CDs and things.
Okay, I can't play them. So in step. The superheroes from
Here
Big Light
the
Fix.
Yeah.
Lorna Ross. Okay. Hi, Lorna. What's your background?
My background's design. So I've been a designer for about 30 years.
Right.
But I've worked in innovation and I've worked a lot in kind of emerging tech and healthcare. I worked at the Mayo Clinic for about 8 years and I ran the design studio at the Centre for Innovation, which is very much looking at the kind of patient experience and innovating from the kind of patient and family perspective versus the kind of clinical perspective.
So you listened to Jacinta's story. And you thought, what can we do to improve her life?
We met. I think what's more important is we spent time together. I mean, we originally heard, I think the production company did a great job of kind of orienting everyone to all the different fixes. And then they kind of matched us. We didn't actually know who we would work with. And then we spent a lot of time together. We did a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we went, because I think, you know, and in principle, there's things you can witness really early or there's things you can be told. And then it just really took time to understand, I think, Jacinta, because you have such strong coping skills that she had actually masked a lot of things that were really, really hard to do.
That'd be the stubbornness.
Yeah, she would say that, yeah. No, and so it was hard, you know, and I think also, you know, when you're being observed and you know, filmed, you were also doing a really good job to kind of cope. And so it actually took a bit of time to start to understand like the extent of it. Like it was really not evident because she was coping so well.
And Jacinta, you didn't know what you wanted as such. You didn't write a shopping list of things that you wanted.
No, really, in some ways the process of being with you and talking with you and doing things in a way was almost enough at the time, because that's the way to do it when you have Alzheimer's. You keep going, try and keep going. And it was helping me to keep my brain in order. And so I was seeing it almost as that itself was great.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I didn't see that I could have any more than
yes.
that. You know,
so which you do. Yeah. And this,
yeah, that people, was the thing.
Yeah, it's like I'm looking at the thing here, Jacinta's chair, and it's this amazing high-tech futuristic chair, mm-hmm. but it looks like a chair that you might see in your, you know, in your sitting room. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. How is it going for you?
It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. It really is. You know, it's so easy now for me just to take out one of my, or take out, to just to turn it on to one of my my music the music
yes.
area, or to look at a book, or to
listen to the radio.
Listen to the radio and have I've got or. Not the English channel.
BBC Four.
Yeah. I've got yes. four, quite like love, BBC yeah. Four, so. Yeah. And so I just have that there.
Yeah.
And it's for me at the moment. It's life changing.
Is it? Yeah. So Lorna, describe the chair to us. What has it got in it?
So
and how did you arrive? Right, at the features of it?
Yeah, the backstory.
It's magic chair.
So, I think when we spent time together, there was two really distinct kind of avenues. There was one we started with, and we kind of went out with Jacinta, and we saw that she's incredibly, you know, outgoing, adventurous. You love to be outdoors. You know, you're a native of the city. So she showed me around Temple Bar where she had grown up and had like great stories. So we originally thought we're going to design something for her that helps her navigate outside of the home. And we're going to give her something that kind of really preserves her independence and maybe kind of helps orient and a little bit of confidence that you can kind of find your way back and stuff. And so that was the original plan. And we thought that was a really good plan. And I think as we played that out, and we were doing this mostly as a design, you know, the design studio at the dock, we were excited. And then we started to speculate on all the things that could go wrong. And we also talked to Gareth, who is, I've forgotten his surname, sorry. He's a wonderful consultant that diagnosed you originally.
Yes, he was fantastic. He's great. Doctor from Beaumont Hospital.
Beaumont. Mm-hmm. And we brought him into one of our workshops and we kind of thought, what do you think? And he had some really legitimate reservations, again, in terms of the kind of potential stressors that we could actually be kind of almost like, you know, amplifying. So we had to do a hard stop and we kind of went back and we thought about, you know, the home itself. And we thought about, you know, one thing that Gareth had actually said was that, you know, your capacity to continue to go out and actually be really courageous and really stubborn it depends an awful lot on your capacity to come home and kind of recoup and recover, and the importance of the home environment, and the importance that the home environment needs to not be a stressful or hostile or kind of chaotic one. And so I think when we heard that, we started to think about there's a huge opportunity in the home, even though you don't typically want to design, you want to kind of, you know, maybe get something that's something a bit more kind of extravagant or extrovert.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of stories just, you know, chatting with you about a lot of the content and the material that you love to connect with. I mean, and you're also, Jacinta's so well read and passionate about books, but also travel and just understanding that all that stuff had been kind of taken away from her. And so we kind of started combining the original idea of just being, having this like nurturing, really peaceful, really restful, restorative product object or solution in the home. And then we thought, let's make it also a kind of gateway to all this material that has been kind of is now so, you know, inaccessible. Can we bring it back and make it more accessible? So that's the origin of, you know, how we ended up with the chair.
And it has just the three buttons. So your music, your books and your radio. And then on the other side, you've...
And the other side, I've got Alexa.
What sort of chats do you have with Alexa?
Well, I can say, what time is it?
Yes,
and then
important.
What's the weather coming to be tomorrow? Or I can't think of it. But just there are some fairly basic questions, but they're really good.
Yes.
And they're great for my grandchildren. Yeah. It's can you sing me a song,
Alexa?
You know, so the children love that. But yeah, so that, I mean, that's, it's great to be able to say, what time is it?
Yeah.
You know, or yeah, just to know that I can, it's time. In a half an hour, I have to go and pick up the kids from school or whatever, you
so,
know.
As Lorna described, this is sort of your sanctuary, really, because this is your anchor to the world, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And your connection to the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's.
And what's it like having your books back?
Well, my books are in there somewhere.
In the chair.
Like they're in there.
In the chair,
you know.
Yeah. Some voice.
But just... It's just great.
Yeah.
It really is just great.
And then you must be the coolest granny in the world.
Very cool. Magic chair.
Yeah.
Magic chair. Yeah, the kids really enjoy that.
Yeah.
And they were part of the camera work when we were doing the
And on a serious note, Cinta, do you get frustrated?
Oh God.
Yeah.
All the time.
And how does...
It's very bad.
And how do you keep that under wraps?
I'm learning.
Yeah.
I can wreck a room very quickly, particularly if there's nobody in it with me.
Yeah.
I can just throw things around because it's so angry. I just get so angry. And little things like... You put something down and it's gone. Mm. You know, it's gone. And it can't be gone. I'm here and I was there 2 minutes ago. Stuff just disappears. And that's probably part from the eye. But just the stress of... We were talking earlier about the stress of just putting an outfit together. I mean, I was always reasonably good at that. But the stress of doing it and the fear of doing something silly like going out half-dressed.
Right.
Because, you know, I have got down to the downstairs part of the house and realised
that
I wasn't fully dressed.
Yeah.
And that's not unusual in Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. you know. So those things really frustrate you. And I know it's going to get worse as the time goes on, but with family and people just to help out, it really does, it makes a huge difference, you know. And my sister, I've got two sisters, one in the States and one in Dublin. And they talk to me a lot and do things for me. And so you know always that you have got that support
yeah.
which is so important.
Yeah.
That support is really, really important.
Yeah.
You know, if you've nagged at somebody or if you really pulled somebody's ear for a day, you've got to always need to have somebody else the next day. But, you know, also, and I think really importantly, I know it's difficult to say, but try and keep a sense of humour. It's not easy, but, you know, you have to.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's hugely important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. People have to watch this tonight because it's such a lovely hour of television and you're amazing in it because you're so honest and you are yourself and your personality shines through and everyone now wants to see your magic chair.
Good, good.
Cinta, thank you so much for coming in.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. And Lorna Ross, thank you, Lorna.
Thanks
for coming in.
Can I just do a quick little plug about the Alzheimer's Society?
Yes.
Because they've been really, really supportive for me as well. So just to say that they really push things out there for us.
Great.
People like myself.
And they're doing great work.
Yep.
They're doing great work.
Great work.
Big Life Fix, RT1 tonight, 9:35.
Okay.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
What a lovely lady, Jacinta Dixon there, featured on Big Life Fix on RTÉ 1 tonight, 9:35. Cry Monster Cry are back. Where did you get the name from? I know, sorry.
It came from like old folk fairy tales when we started writing music at the time. I was studying in UCD not far from here. I was doing a children's literature.
Right.
and reading a lot of Grimm fairy tales and Brothers Grimm, so kind of had that connotation. People tell us it sounds like a heavy metal band now, though,
right,
so
okay.
We're stuck with it.
Yeah. So, When the Snow Falls, I'll Be Gone, there's one screening of it on the 14th of March in the IFI in Dublin, and then it's going to be up on your website
for
people
right.
to view. Already you've sang Tides, the title track from your new album, and now you're going to sing...
We're going to sing a McChristopher song, Listen Girl.
Great.
We're playing the Pepper Canister on the 27th of March as well, so just get that in there.
Yeah, important.
Yeah. I said, listen, girl, I might, if you ask me very nice, I just might tell you the truth. Because you give me love and I like it, charming as you might be. Listen, girl, you like it too. Oh, and all of the corner kids are looking for joy, dreaming of playgrounds and toys. Oh, but they'll dream no more, cause they've been there before, and now they just sit and absorb. Like when I couldn't get out of bed, babe, oh, I can hardly walk, but I come here to muse, yeah, I come here to talk. So you listen, girl, I might, you ask me very nice, I just might tell you the truth. On the fluids that hold me in my mind, a candle in the way, I'm falling back in time. But be up with a little doubt, it brightens up my night.
Cry Monster Cry, Pepper Canister Church on the
27th of March.
Thanks for coming in, and
thanks
good luck with the documentary.
Thanks,
that's it from us. Mary Wilson is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.